Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, part one of our interview with Sig Rogich, the head of Rogich Communications, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are delighted to welcome back to the program Sig Rogich. He's president of Rogich Communications and the 2017 recipient of the Frank McCullough Award. A pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Thank you, Sam. Nice to be with you.
One of the things that you are noted for is crisis management. And so I wanted to start out asking you where you were when you heard the news about the shootings.
I wasn't awake. You know, my wife came in and told me about it. She got up early in the night and happened to turn the news on, and the stories were kind of rolling out, and she woke me up. And we both got up and watched it in horror. You know, to see this kind of thing happening is it's just a horrible thing to go through, especially this close to home, you know, just down the street from where I live.
Had you ever thought in terms of something like this happening here? Because people have talked about, oh, well, it was known that Las Vegas was a soft target, but that's all well and good until something actually happens.
Well, that's a good question. I've often thought that we are potentially there. I mean, we were named, you know, by ISIS as an entity that was on their target list, you know, and I think we had some federal funds that came our way because of that, and that was way back to the George Bush days. So I knew that we were potentially on people's radar screen. You just don't expect you don't expect something like this to happen ever, because there's no apparent motive, and they can't seem to find one where the others, you know, have a motive to disrupt and dismantle and get rid of this thing we call America. This man was psychotic, obviously, and opened fire on innocent people. And it's hard to comprehend. It's still very surrealistic, Sam. I drive by there, and I look there, and I stop at the memorial, and I slow down my car, and I look at all the people who are going through there, paying their respects, and weepy-eyed and heavy in their comments, you know, and because they can't quite contain themselves. And it's very touching and very moving.
You've been here all of your life. Well, not all of your life, but most of your life. And, you know, you have known Las Vegas as a community. I think that most of the rest of the country and perhaps the world sees Las Vegas as Sin City, but this really gave Las Vegas a chance to show that it is a real community.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've always said that I think we probably per capita do more for charities than any city in the world, literally. And I laughingly think, you know, it started with that old gang of mine. You know, they all came here to do business. They were illegal in the places they were doing it previously. And I think to atone for their sins in some way, they contributed heavily to all the great charities we have here. You know, I'm involved with a lot of them. I have been. Opportunity Village is a good example. The Public Education Foundation that I chaired for 20-some years. And but to look at the Heart Society and the Three Square and Catholic Charities and the Jewish community, and it goes on and on and on and on, and it has ever since I've lived here. I've never not known us to participate, and I think the world just saw that side of the city.
And it's been amazing. And you know, it's interesting because coming from, even just coming from Northern Nevada, the news had moved on to the fires in Northern California, to what's going on in Puerto Rico. It was no longer the headline, but when you come into Las Vegas and you talk to the people who live here, you realize it's a very, very major part of everybody's life here.
Well, you know, it was. It's like we're, you know, revisiting the horsemen, you know, of feast, of famine, and pestilence, and all that goes with it. And we're seeing so much of this happen today in the world. A lot of it happened in the past to a different degree, but we didn't have this thing called the internet, you know, when they had these horrific events in the world, you know, in the 1800s and the early 1900s and up into the 50s. But we didn't have this instant communication, and so you didn't feel the impact quite like you do today with this ability to instantly communicate and show what's happening and have cameras and, you know, in this case, 28,000 cameras that are built into phones to take footage so people could be part of that horrifying moment and feel it firsthand.
And it was interesting. We were staying at Treasure Island, and there's a CVS that backs onto it, onto the strip. And the other night, there were a line of police cars with their rotating beacons going all the way down the strip. And I asked the employees if they knew what was going on, and they said, well, you know, it's Las Vegas. You know what happened 2 weeks ago. Anything could happen. And it turned out it was actually that peaceful march that they made from all the way down to Mandalay Bay. So there's definitely, people are on edge here, and it's going to take a while to get past this.
Well, I'm not sure you ever get over something like that. You kind of learn to deal with it. It's like losing a member of your family. You never get over those kinds of tragic moments in life. You just learn how to deal with them.
Let's take a break. More with Sig Rogich when we come back.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Sig Rogich, the president of Rogich Communications. He's been a presidential advisor to every president going back to Reagan. Have you actually talked to Donald Trump since he's been in office?
Well, I've talked to Donald Trump. He's a member of this golf course, my country club where I live, and so I would see him on the driving range, and I talked to him then. But I represented him many, many years ago. Mike Rumbolz had left the Gaming Control Board as chairman, and Mike became his point of contact here. He hired Mike to run his operations in Nevada when he was thinking of getting gaming here. And then Mike subsequently hired my firm, R&R Advertising. So technically, I still have a contract with him. But no, I don't communicate much.
Okay, so give us your impressions from back in the day when you did have a relationship with him. Is the person you knew then the person you see as president?
Well, I didn't know him well enough to make that comparison, Sam, to be honest with you. I knew him in passing. I knew him to be a young, dynamic, whiz kind of kid, you know. And I think he's probably in the same mold today as he was then. The difference now is you're doing it in this thing called the White House. It's under the microscope of everybody. And you can't think out loud, and he has a tendency to do that. And so, you know, he has a tendency then to step on his own stories. You know, we would roll out, when I worked in the White House, we would roll out a story a week. That was the ideal goal. So you got a full week's play on it with media. And in the White House, they're doing, a story every half hour, to be facetious. But they'll announce something significant on Monday, and then on Tuesday afternoon they have something else that they have control over, but they decide to announce it. So it steps on the first story. So you never get maximum exposure, and you don't get maximum benefits if it's something good.
You know, we've heard for years that government should be run like a business. It'll be more efficient. But it seems here's an example of where the president doesn't really understand how things work between the White House and the Congress and the court system.
Well, there's truth to that, too. And I'm not sure anybody really understands it fully, because it's a work in motion. You know, I used to call it the epicenter of the universe, and it was. There's an old song that said, remember Sinatra's song, Riding High in April, Shot Down in May? Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. I changed it to Riding High at 8 o'clock, Shot Down at 8:15, you know, and I would sing it that way, because that's how quickly things move in the White House. You know, it's a small compound, really, in size and scope, and the staff is minimal. It's a very small staff to run what they do, and you have to be prepared for changes, and that's just the way it is. And I think that he's probably understanding that more and more as he moves along. You know, it's a work in progress for him to learn government. He'd never been in government before, and all of a sudden he's president of the United States. So I think they're getting a better handle on things, I sense from afar. You can't have five powers of pockets of power in the White House and hope to really succeed. You can't have someone talking to the president about issues without letting the chief of staff know that you're going to be talking about that particular issue. And you can't, in his case, he had five pockets of strength. You know, his daughter, his son-in-law, the chief of staff, the head of the National Security Council, and Bannon, who had a special title. So you had five different spheres of influence, you know, and it was the last one to see the president, and that's kind of how it went.
And it's been interesting to see that as he's bumped up against the Republicans in Congress, he's reached out to the Democrats, and it's Chuck and Nancy, and he's looking to cut deals, but excluding the Republicans from being a part of that. How does that work in the long game?
Well, he might have some success, you know, because I don't think he's a Republican in the mold of Republicans. I don't think he understands federalism. And I don't think he's probably ever read the Federalist Papers. He doesn't appear to me to be a real student of history per se, and I think that's kind of essential, because I do think history repeats itself. You know, if you look back at the world, you know, it may change the players, but the essence of it stays the same. So I think that from that perspective, it's a learning process for him. On the other hand, he's done some good things. You know, I have to give him credit. He's unraveled a lot of federal rules and regulations that I think are non-essential. I think that he was left with maybe the biggest foreign policy crisis in my lifetime. We had problems in Egypt. We lost an ally because we turned our back on Mubarak. We made a deal with Libya and Gaddafi to give up arms, and we turned our back on Gaddafi and kicked him out, with no one to replace him, so it became a harbor for terrorists. We have problems in Somalia, like we didn't expect. We have problems in Saudi Arabia as a result of problems that we had in Qatar, and it goes on and on and on. So not to mention what was going on in Russia and China. You know, we were kind of a non-player during the Obama years. It was deliberate. They didn't want to be as involved.
They wanted the pivot to Asia, as they put it.
I think that they didn't quite understand that, you know, in today's world, you know, it's pretty homogenized. You know, we're all together here. What they're doing in China today is extraordinary. I don't know if you follow the Silk Road.
Yes.
One band, one belt, one road theory. But it's going to touch close to like 40% of the gross domestic product of the world. Just try to fathom that. Trillions and trillions of dollars. And it's going to touch close to 70% of the world's population. President Xi, and we do work with China, as you know, but I think he is going to be as impactful as Mao Zedong was to China. I think he'll be viewed in the same light, and I think that he will become a world player to a degree like we haven't seen yet.
And he now has got another 5 years in his position, so he has the opportunity to push forward with all of this.
He could be there forever, in my view, for however long he wants to be, but I think yesterday the Congress started in China. It'll end here in the next week or 10 days, and he'll get everything he wants. And, you know, people don't even realize what he's doing. He's mandating all electric cars by 2020, so they won't have a pollution problem. And if you go to Beijing, you know, it's real. It's cleaner now than it's ever been, but it's a real problem. And I've been there when they've had what they call red alert days or red flag days, where you don't go out, you just stay in the hotel room because the smog is so severe.
When you say that he will be perhaps more influential than Mao, be specific in a couple of areas.
Well, you know, one of the significant areas, I think, that really was smart politically, he started the equivalent of the International Monetary Fund. You know, he was having problems with it, and so he started his own. Everybody joined in and invested in it. But he's going to have the ability to manufacture at costs that we can't compete with. I'm told they are right on the verge of announcing batteries that are 5 or 6 or 10 times stronger than our best batteries. You know, they're building cameras and phones to compete with iPhone. You know, their new product line is really good. And they've got this thing called population, and they've got geography. You know, they've got the essence of what you need, what America has. They don't have as good a geography as we do, but they make up for it with manpower.
To say the least. Let's take a break. More with Sig Rogich when we come back.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
I'm Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association. Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Sig Rogich. He's the president of Rogich Communications. Rex Tillerson, your thoughts on Mr. Tillerson?
You mean our Secretary of State?
Our Secretary of State. Let's lay out, first of all, former head of Exxon, which, compared to most countries, would be bigger than most countries.
Yes.
So a man of vast experience, and vast experience dealing in foreign countries with heads of state. He seems to be the perfect pick for this job.
I think he's an extraordinarily good pick, yes. I'm very pleased with him from the way I watch him perform his duties. I talked to Jim Baker about him, and Baker, I think, is impressed with him, too.
Well, he recommended him.
Yeah, he's very impressed with him and likes him, and Jim Baker's one of my close friends for many, many years, for 30-some years now, and I always respect what he has to say. And he and I have had that same discussion about spheres of influence within the framework of the White House and how it won't work if you've got too many people going directly to the president. And so I I've always agreed with that, and we've shared our comments together. But I think the Secretary of State is tenacious. I think he's an honest broker. I think he's got a reputation for not being duplicitous. And I think he's independent enough that he gives a balance in the framework of the White House that you need to see happen. I think as close as they were, George Bush, 41, and James Baker. And Baker was Secretary of State, and he would not vet things without discussing it with the president and vice versa. I think the Secretary of State, Tillis, works that way. I'm not sure the president does on the other side. But I think as time goes on, you'll see more of that. So I'm very pleased with him. I'm proud of him, and I think he's got a great history and of succeeding, and I think he's a perfect pick for that spot.
You know, from your view from inside the White House, General Kelly seems to be a good man to be chief of staff, and he says that the role of chief of staff is not to manage the president, but to manage the staff. Correct?
I think absolutely correct. First of all, a president is going to be managed by a lot of the staff. You know, speechwriters have a different role in the White House than communications people. And communications people in the framework of the West Wing of the White House have different roles than the head of the National Security Council or the press secretary. So they all come at him with their own particular perspective on things and issues and how they should be handled. I think Kelly is a perfect choice for chief of staff. That person has to, they don't win popularity contests. At the same time, they're not, you know, in your face. They've got to keep the staff reasonably happy. But I had John Sununu when I worked there, the former governor of New Hampshire. And I know that I would go to the White House in the dark. I used to laugh. I'd go to work in the dark and come home in the dark. And I'd get up at 5 o'clock every morning. I'd be at the White House at 6. I'd have my own staff meeting from 6:30 to 7. And from 7 to 7:30, I'd have a senior staff meeting. From 7:30 to 8:30, I'd have a breakfast meeting. By noon, you have 6, 7, 8 meetings, and you're doing things. That's where I met Bill Clinton. You know, he was head of the National Governors Association, and I was in charge of the Education Summit at the University of Virginia, where we hosted it. And he came to my office for a month and worked. So I got to know him. And when we lost the presidency to him, Hillary took my office. She probably saw it there when he was working out of there. So it's a interesting place to work, and it's a small facility, really, when you really get into it.
Do you have time for me to do a little bit more with you?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to do a second show with Sig Rogich, so stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
On our next broadcast, part two of my interview with Sig Rogich. We'll see you on the next broadcast.